All right, happy Saturday, D-Gens. How's it going?
Good.
How are you walking around?
I'm always the beneficiary of these things. New York is always in the center. We're still in the center of everything. So if we're going to do a three-way West Coast, East Coast, Hong Kong time, it's always like the most relaxed for me because it's like 10 in the morning over here.
I like it's the short end of the stick on all things financial.
West Coast,
the worst time zone.
People who have I've talked to who have worked in finance, you know, trading New York hours out in LA, they just get in super, super early, right? They're getting like 5 a.m., but they get off at...
They wake up at like 4.
Yeah, but they get off at like 2:30, and then they go and surf and shit, right? I don't know. I think on some level, it's not too bad. You know, it's okay.
Well, it's compatible with very healthy lifestyles. Like people
it is
going out and drinking and stuff.
It is. And it's not like, you know, some like New York people, they will... you know, like, okay, so New York Wall Street people will get up at 4 anyway, right? Or they'll get up at 5 anyway, and they'll go to the gym first and whatever, and then they'll be on the desk by 7. At least that was the case, like, pre-COVID. But in L.A., if you're trading New York hours in L.A., you can really only be there at 6 anyway, right? So it's not, like, that much worse from that perspective. It's not like nobody's going to expect you to get up at 2, right? Like, it was ridiculous, so...
Yeah, there's a lot of people in New York that have London overlap too, right? So there's...
Yeah. Like they say London is probably... like maybe from a technical perspective, like London is probably the best time zone because you can catch the back end of Asia and the front end of New York or something. But yeah. But yeah, team wins. So, you know. Hey, guys.
Why do we even have...
daylight savings?
Why do we even have... 6.5 hours or whatever of trading per day. Like, why do we need that? Why can't we do literally a 1 hour, you know, trading window? Like, what do you need 6.5 hours of trading for? Honestly. Does so much happen during the day that you can't get your trades in 1 hour?
No, but you... Well, that's a good question.
Well, it comes from the physical floor days, right?
People had to do shit. You got to put an honest work day.
If you're passing like paper tickets around and you got to like tabulate all this shit and it takes time to execute trades, it makes sense that you have an hour at the front and back of each day and then you have a full day of actual activity. But
okay, but now,
electronic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you need six and a half hours for? I'm saying you can do less. I'm not saying you need 15 minutes, but why not 1 hour? You know?
It would be logical to reduce the amount of trading because everything's faster, but instead they're going to 24-7.
They're going the other way. It's like 24.
Yeah, 24-7. It's 24-7. It's 24 hours with the dark pools and shit.
Yeah, pretty much. The major US ETFs, I can trade them in Hong Kong time at like 2 in the afternoon here. Right? And it's wider, but it's okay. It's okay. You know, it's fine. And Hong Kong is still very old school. Like it actually closes for 2 hours at lunch. Like there's no more, like it literally stops. You cannot trade.
Yeah, I've been following the Alibaba Hong Kong session, and it's like there's a thing on the chart just that says lunch break. I'm like, what the fuck?
There's a real lunch break. It's 2 hours long.
That's civilized, you know? There's no break in the trading day. It's just 6.5 hours of pure chaos. Well, now it's not.
We should go back to like the sort of, you know, 12-year-old kid with the with that sort of like Depression-era hat writing the quotes on a chalkboard.
That's how
I want to trade.
In my first year of school, in law school, they took us on a field trip to the New York Stock Exchange, and I was like, I remember telling one of the pit bosses or whatever, I was like, this looks like a casino. And they got mad at me. They were like, dude,
sir,
no.
Sir.
This is the beating heart of the American economy. They told me that on the floor.
This is capitalism at work. This is why we win.
Even then, I was like, this guy's protesting too much. He knows it's a fucking casino. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't be this sensitive about it if you didn't already know.
It seems more the case later. Like, aren't you working on, like, all these double and triple levered single stock?
Okay, yeah. So, yes. So, I've been spending a lot of time. I just got, I've got a number of of things in front of me at work that are like, you know, 2x, 2x NASDAQ, 3x NVIDIA. It's like a whole, I'll see a whole list of like plus 3x, minus 3x, whatever. And it's all meme stonks and technology indexes and stuff.
Mm.
And to me, that's a sign of like it's over. I don't know. I think I've been thinking it's over for years, so I'm probably fucking wrong. It's probably got way more legs. But I don't know. That seems a little degenerate to me. You know what I mean?
Well, it's the degen stuff is just starting to hit the market, right? Like the triple and the double, you know, all that stuff has been, it's only been out for about a year. So if you're still working on that stuff for launch, it's got to go for at least a year or two after, right? For it to get real frothy.
Yeah, for it to build up. I mean, I think they've had like double and double longs and double shorts for a while, but at least at the beginning, it was like double long S&P or, you know, double long Dow Jones and maybe like somewhat
also,
esoterically.
They didn't advertise it in the subway like they do now.
Yeah,
I was coming home on the subway and they said, and they have like, there's a new platform called Moomoo. Have you heard of this one?
No.
Moomoo as in the bull, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And
that's actually, I think that's actually a Chinese company.
It's a Chinese company, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're called something else. They're called like Futu Bull or something like that out here in Hong Kong and everywhere.
They're rebranded as Moomoo here, as in the bull.
Yeah.
They're advertising the subway.
Yeah. It's real degeneracy.
They have a picture of a laptop and a phone, and they've got all these crazy charts on both of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, see? They just want everyone to turn into a trader now. Like, this is the thing. Yeah. Like, nobody works. Nobody has a craft or a skill. Everyone just everyone's a capitalist.
Yeah, like have you seen one of their physical stores? Like, or actually, do they have physical stores in New York for that, or is it just like
Moomoo? I don't know.
Okay, they have physical stores here in Hong Kong, and like it just got the vibe of like
to do like what? Sort
of, I don't know, but like there's some like computers in there. It feels like
I'm guessing the open accounts and demo the platform.
Yeah, it feels like a low grade
capitalism.
It feels like a low grade. You remember the Microsoft store, which was like a low grade Apple store. It feels like a low grade version of the Microsoft store. Kind of in that
E-Trade right? used to have physical locations before the Morgan Stanley buyout, and you would go in and it would be like, like you can manage accounts there. Like they tried to pass themselves off as some kind of bank instead of just a degen trading platform.
Oh, so you could like get your mortgage from them and slightly increase the balance on your mortgage.
I think at some point they started offering. At some point, they started offering like regular financial services.
Yeah.
And then at some point, that's Morgan like Stanley the next bought step. Them and just shut all that stuff.
It kind of makes sense as like a next step because like you might as well just combine all of your stuff into a single account and be, I guess, extremely efficient. It would be.
I live next to a Fidelity location, so you can like it just looks like a bank branch.
Yeah. No, that's for like wealth management. They want to go. They'll probably because like I get it. Once you hit over a certain amount, they just nonstop call you and text you about coming in for a checkup and
financial help.
Want to run your money for you?
Yeah,
I get that.
They're like,
Morgan
come on,
Stanley.
We'll run your money for you at 1.5% a year. Nothing, no big deal.
At that point, you might as well just buy triple levered NVIDIA. To be honest with you. Why not?
I would not trust like retail wealth management. I'm not saying having a wealth manager is a bad idea, but I wouldn't go to Fidelity for it if I'm
no way.
It's like
those guys will fleece you.
Honestly, you could probably get generally better advice on the internet at this point. So
on Reddit.
Yeah, I mean, not like
the people I know who made a lot of money in the tech industry who have wealth management. I mean, they have access to stuff like where you can swap out the thing that made you rich in kind for like a pool of other rich people stocks and then have like no taxable event. And like, there's all these weird vehicles that you can use so that you can like, you know,
yeah, keep your wealth. Do some kind of swap thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's some kind of income. There's like a lockup and there's like a whole bunch of other strings attached, but there's like all these weird products that you can have access to when you have like more than 10 million, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I've got this theory that UBS does a lot of that. I've got this theory that one of the reasons they're doing a lot of like retail, they're like pumping this idea of the home retail day trader so hard is they want. I think ever since the meme stonk phenomenon, the big institutional players are looking for more retail bag holders to come in, and
that's why they buy the flow.
Yeah, they're trying to dump the bag onto retail investors before they get out. But I do think that there probably is already a significant flow away from US equities at the institutional level is what I think. And they're loading up on retail instruments to try and sort of like bring new liquidity so that they can, you know, sort of like manage their exit without killing the price. I don't know if that's true or not, but I just get that feeling.
You look at the S&P the last month, it's just been chopping up and down in this range.
Yeah.
It's like a distribution pattern.
Yeah, which I think, doesn't that sometimes suggest like that there's a rotation happening there? Like if it's chopping up and down like this, it's sort of a managed cycle of of rotation out.
Yeah, like somebody is diversifying into a bunch of bags, basically.
Well,
yeah. So
Bitcoin, right? When Bitcoin starts chopping like that, I feel like
it can, for either I think public markets or shit like Bitcoin. I mean, it could go either way, but you just have to look at it and kind of get the feel for what's actually happening, right?
So, team, you're talking about this like this bag transfer, the real bag transfer technology, all right, is going to be when they figure out some way to let retail participate, like real retail, right? Like through the traditional E-Trade or whatever, in purchasing private equity shares off of existing LPs. That is the real transfer right now, because right now a lot of that's still frozen. They haven't moved the marks, right? And there's really a limited amount of new capital that's going into PE right now. Fundraising is kind of iffy. It's a little bit better now because the sentiment's okay, but it's a little bit iffy. And of course, they don't want to mark down because that makes you look bad. So they're trying to like...
Is it the interest rates that's causing it?
So I think like in 22, right? When rate hikes came in and public markets were down like 15, 20%, privates basically just marked flat, right? Which is very difficult to believe, right? It's not particularly credible, but they marked it flat, but like kind of throughout the industry. And then 2023 had a big rally, and 24 as well. 23 PE was also flat because like you didn't mark down, so you can't mark up now, right? On the recovery. And 24, it was also kind of just a little bit frozen. A lot of the rally in 24 was also Magnificent Seven, which a lot of those PE firms, like, PE doesn't hold that kind of company, right? So they also couldn't participate in that. So like by and large, I think PE has not had like a particularly great time, which doesn't show up as much if you just look at sort of the sort of marks. But if you look at aggregate fundraising and aggregate distributions, it's a bit tough. So yeah, they're kind of waiting on this financial technology. I think I read somewhere, and don't quote me on this, but like, it was Apollo or one of these like really, really big ones. They were trying to figure out some way to get a regulatory exemption so that they could put up to 10 or 15% illiquid assets into liquid ETFs, right? Wow. So that kind of tells you what's going on, right? Like,
you know what they could do?
They need the new SPAC. They need
exit liquidity.
What they could do, think about it. So if it was me, I would, number one, call up Elon and have him struggle session the SEC into submission. Number two, have the SEC pass an immediate order allowing advertising for SPACs in subways. And then I would advertise new SPACs in the subway along with a coupon code that says, you know, if you sign up now, you'll get like a free $150
10 SPACs
credit.
For a price of 9 or something.
You'll get $150 credit if you sign up with Moomoo today.
Oh, they do that stuff, I think.
For your new and access to new SPACs.
Yeah, then
you just sell SPACs through Chamath Palihapitiya and Jason Calacanis to co-branded SPACs. And they're all, you know, some private equity shit, you know, that they take public.
It'll be the all-in investment bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that I could see that. I could see that. And it has like
I'm joking, very strong retail. I totally could see that actually happening.
It sounds ridiculous, but also like with enough elements of believability that something will happen that borrows many elements from that, right? So
you know what I like about this whole PE situation is a lot of, and I'm obviously not at this scale, but I was slightly involved in this.
What do you mean by the PE situation? Like the higher interest rate environment, and they're kind of stuck, or what?
Yeah, well, I mean, private equity firms are basically just the bag holders that bought, you know, all these $100 million companies in the middle of the country owned by families or whatever.
And all these families. Financed by a lot of debt.
Yeah, but all these families got bought out to the tune of millions and millions of dollars. So they're fucking chilling. They're great. They're like, yeah, take my fucking bags. I've been holding these bags for 30 years.
They're like the Tuhawa of America. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
What's that?
It's like the sort people who sold all their money to the
rich
to the
country
CCP.
Bumpkins. Rich country
okay,
bumpkins.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so this is like a new like upper class in throughout the entire country that got liquid during this entire PE craze. And
what kind of companies are we talking about? What kind of businesses, like, and how much money are we talking about?
My buddies who work in PE, they buy like weird shit, man, like lumber businesses in the middle of the country, like light manufacturing, like car parts, shit you've just never heard of, dude. And these companies have been run by these families for, you know, generations, you know, possibly even like a century or longer. And then at some point, it's just too juicy. All these, you know, all these PE guys came in with a shitload of debt at 0% or very close to it and just started buying them all out.
I have a family friend that works. She's pretty high up at this PE, this software PE company called Catalyst. I think it's called Catalyst. Mm. And is that Robert Smith guy from Goldman? My friend was with him since Goldman. And they're like the second biggest software company, if you count a PE portfolio as a single company. They're the second largest software company in America, I think, behind Microsoft.
Wow.
No one's ever heard of them.
Yeah.
Because it's really a PE fund, right? So you wouldn't think of it as a single software
company. Yeah. It's not listed, product. Right? Like, it's just kind of, yeah.
Yeah. So, behind the scenes. Dude, she's fucking loaded, man. She is loaded. She lives on Bainbridge Island. Her house, she lives by herself, by the way. And her house, it's my sister's best friend from childhood.
Oh, yeah. How old is she?
my sister's age. She's 55.
Ah, oh, dang it.
No. Well.
But, dude, her house looks like, it looks like a fucking lodge. Like a vacation lodge that multiple families would live in. But, I got curious. I'm like, what kind of stuff do they do? And I went over to Catalyst's website and looked at their portfolio companies. And it's like car dealership software, dental office software.
It's like really those boring and efficient shit that they can come in and you know, make hay out of, right? So
I think the model for them is like, basically, there's loads of car dealerships. There's loads of dental offices. There's loads of whatever the fuck, you know, lumber management software. I don't know. Weird shit that they do. But I think the reason they make money is because they're doing it as, you know, it's a SAA, it's a SaaS portfolio. And so they've just become software landlords, right? And
those kind of companies were actually, they made up the majority of our client portfolio. And there's thousands of these companies. They make a lot of money and nobody's ever heard of them. And they were just started by either families or enterprising individuals like 10, 15, 20 years ago. And they themselves have a huge book of business. And it's just like It's the middle of the U.S. economy that nobody ever really thinks about.
Yeah, and you, if you aggregate enough of it, you can sort of become a very large company sort of by playing Moneyball. You know, you sort of like build yourself up using small companies to become a huge company like Catalyst.
Yeah, and then your like car dealer management software basically has no competitors because you own them all, right? So you charge what you want.
Or, yeah, or there's like three or four in the entire country. They have a recurring business
model, it's a subscription model. Everything's subscription now. Like fucking Adobe, yeah, like I use Lightroom, I have to subscribe to it.
Yeah, it's a massive anything as a service is like a huge benefit to your cash flow like situation, right? Because the sales cycle only happens once. Like you don't have to sell the same shit over and over. You just sell it once and then lock them in. And then there's a certain amount of vendor lock-in that
makes
happens.
It hard
and
to
then,
leave, yeah.
Yeah, it makes it hard to leave. And like, you have to retrain your people and all this shit. So it's
everyone's using the same thing, right? They probably got you hooked on some sort of data feed. And then they probably have all your data. Your data probably sits with them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you're locked in. I mean, and then they probably don't charge that much. So probably none of the businesses are seriously thinking about cutting
it. None of them are looking at it as like their biggest pain point.
A CTO, you know, like I'm not going to do that. Yeah. I'm a fucking car dealership.
These are the kind of companies that on the last pod that I mentioned just kept buying storage for no reason. Like that's it was part of their business model. It's just retain all this data for their customers and. They're not even doing anything with it. They just have it.
Well, you can't, you know, it's their data. What are they going to do? Delete it, right? They're just like, I'm going to charge you money for holding your data.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's beautiful.
Should have gone to PE.
Oh, sorry. It's called Vista. Catalyst is another firm. It's called Vista Equity Partners.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, they were in the news because Robert Smith almost went to prison for tax evasion. But then he cut a deal where he ratted out his business partner, who was a car dealership software guy. And his partner went to prison instead of him.
You know what they say, shit always rolls downhill, right?
Brutal. Just kind of curious, like these kinds of, if you rat out the other guy, we'll let you off easy. Do those deals tend to happen more often if you're like rich and powerful, or is it just kind of, is this like anybody can get this deal in the right situation? Is this like equally distributed?
My guess is that Robert Smith he's a billionaire, right? He goes to Davos.
Yeah.
My guess is that he plays in the big enough kid pool that,
they didn't really want donates.
He donates to politicians.
I see.
Without a doubt, I have not looked this up, but if someone wants to look it up, Vista Equity Partners, Robert Smith, is he a major donor to the Democratic Party? I'm sure he is.
So he's somewhat transcended.
Yeah. If he is, then, you know, the U.S. attorney is going to get a phone call.
Well, also, this is the classic prisoner's dilemma, you know? Like, if you move first to rat someone out, you get the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but the question is, who do they offer first?
Yeah. This is like,
well, they don't. I mean, as long as you get caught first, if you're the first guy who gets caught, They don't know who the other people are, right?
I think it's Nancy Pelosi making the decision. Probably Robert Smith called up Nancy Pelosi and was like, "Look, if you call in a favor, I'll give you some insider trading tips." And she's like, "Deal."
All right. Pelosi's like, I looked this up the other day. Pelosi's like 80 something years old.
Yeah, she's ancient.
She's ancient, but actually,
there's pictures of her walking around Capitol Hill with a walker now.
Pretty sharp, though, for 80 plus.
There's speaking of pictures, I just saw a picture of her with JFK, like at some party back in like the fucking 60s, dude. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck?
She wasn't bad looking back in the day. I'm not saying I'm not saying she's a model, but she wasn't a bad looking lady.
1960s.
Yeah, I mean, and also she's related to Gavin Newsom in some way. I think she's like his second aunt or something like that. But
she's Gavin Newsom's aunt.
Yeah, dude, it's super corrupt. They're all related. This is why I hate California politics. It's a bunch of guys.
California to me is kind of like there's still families that own like a county's worth of land or something, you know, that kind of shit. Like,
well, yeah, that's what the so I don't know if you guys know, but the rancho system was basically the Spanish aristocracy system, and all of the land grants for the cities, and not grants, but purchases for the cities and counties and all that stuff, roughly resemble the rancho system. So like that entire like matrix of property ownership just translated down through the years, and it's all, yeah, just super corrupt and interconnected and like incestuous. It's terrible.
But I think it's because, like, compared to the East Coast, what, you know, West Coast is still relatively new, and they haven't, like, gotten away from the initial, like, reduction of land into private property.
Yeah.
And it takes generations of, like, subdivision and all that shit before you become like us, where you don't own anything except a 300-square-foot apartment.
And the, you know, $10 million stock portfolio. Is that more of the East Coast thing? Because like this idea of concentrated wealth ownership that stems back 200 years almost seems more East Coast to me than West Coast. There's got to be somewhere there.
Well, there's less of it on the West Coast because it's less developed.
Yeah. Right. Like so less of the West. Yeah. So like, what's the East Coast version of this? Right. There's got to be something.
Well, also, you don't see, I think what I'm saying is like in terms of property, I'm not saying in terms of financial wealth. Yeah. You have, you know, gobs of billionaires. Yeah, yeah, but yeah.
Because one block in New York City is worth as much as entire cities out here in the West Coast.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is like, I don't think you don't have many families that own like an entire county, you know, that kind of thing where you're like, wait, how, like, public levels of like land ownership here. I think the land is, I don't know, I'm just talking on my ass, but I feel like East Coast is so old that eventually all of the large land, you know, all of the large landholders through generations, like, you know, it gets subdivided through by heir, and, you know, they get cash poor, so they start selling off land, you know, that kind of stuff. And over time, I think the size of the holdings just diminished to now where
my hunch really is that also on the West Coast, more company or more families, because it isn't as old, have retained ownership, and now they just do leasing deals, which is you know, in a less dense environment, it's just more visible because you can lease an entire, you know, city's worth of land.
Mm.
Developers and
what's up with the that pistachio family? That came to, I saw a lot of that like from online during the fires.
The wonderful company.
Yeah, what is that about? Like it. I was reading a little bit about them, and it sounds like they control, because of like where they own land. They basically control the flow of water in California, yeah, and
they own
like
water rights. They own water rights, and they use that those rights to irrigate massive farms that do like cashews and pistachios and pomegranates and all this stuff. That, you know, that palm wonderful juice.
Yeah.
That's their first stuff.
It looks like a calabash gourd, the bottle.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that was their first big consumer brand, and they changed the company name to Wonderful. And then their headquarters is actually like a mile away from here.
They sell their shit in Costco. They sell that. The palm juice is there.
Yeah.
Their pistachios are there.
You know. They have a huge building right next to where our office used to be. You can see it from the freeway. It just says Wonderful.
See, that is quintessential fucking California fortune. That's so old school, you know? Like water rights, pistachios, and pomegranates. You know? Like, yep. That's so fucking West Coast. Like, there's no such thing as like that here over here.
But it's still owned by the original family, right? Here, you know? Still owned by the original family. That wonderful company.
I don't know if they, it's all their original land. I mean, they probably got into the financial side of like buying land and stuff at some point, but I like the mineral and water rights. I'm obviously not in this world, so I don't know, but I mean, just living here, you hear all this stuff about how they grew it from basically just a farm ag company into like a CPG, you know, behemoth.
Yeah, like New York solved its water issue like you know, 100 plus years ago, and they built like the world's largest, longest underwater tunnel to go from upstate into New York, into Manhattan. It's all public works. Like they did this at its, like they were smart. Like they did it in a way that ensured that New York would basically have like a perpetual, you know, a perpetual source of fresh water that could not be interrupted by private, because it goes under the, it goes under the land. And so, I don't know. Here, it's just, it's crazy that like the water supply could be running through someone's private private land.
Yeah, it, I mean, it gets complicated out here. I don't know all the details, but I mean, we're basically, there's like five different states sharing like two sources of water. So there's the entire Vegas, Arizona, Phoenix situation, and there's Southern California, and then there's Nevada, and it gets really complicated.
That's crazy, dude. I don't even know how to think about that.
Isn't like pistachio farming super water intensive?
All of it,
like,
is super
intensive. Isn't like this something you would not? Yeah, like why is this happening in California? That's what I.
Do you not like salty pistachios? They're delicious.
Yeah, all this stuff is super tasty.
That's the problem. But I like water. So,
well, a lot of it comes from groundwater. It's not just like people siphoning off drinking water from residents.
It's
diversified, but it's just very complicated the way it works.
By the way, is it me, or has the LA wildfire, the LA fires sort of like disappeared from the fucking national?
No one talks about it.
It just happened. It literally just happened.
It was like a month ago.
And then there was a major airline crash in Washington, D.C., and that's out of the news cycle, too. Like, no one talks about this. Dude, back in the day, if this happened in the 90s, we would be talking about it for half the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
like in the 90s, we the entire nation basically stopped to just focus on the O.J. Simpson trial. Like nothing else was going on. Like, and the attention span was incredible. Like it was going on
for 6 months or something, right? Yeah.
Something like that, dude. And they had the trial on live TV, and every fucking, you know, public, every bodega, every airport, everything, all the time was just O.J. Simpson trial for months. And that was the entire, like, the country was.
That's actually one of my. That's actually one of my childhood memories is the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah, just no way.
A cornerstone memory.
Yeah.
No, okay, but going back to it, like, what did happen to the fire? Like, it just stopped one day. Was there rain? Did it burn out?
Like, yeah. Well, they battled it for like 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks later, or about a week later, it started raining, and then that was the end of the fire.
Okay.
And now we've got some mudslides and flooding and stuff, but it's not at the same scale. So people have just kind of forgotten about it.
Did it expect, crazy, like?
Dude. But also, it's like nothing is actually happening right now. It's just cleanup and working its way through the bureaucracy that, you know, is going to be required.
The insurance
to
bureaucracy.
Rebuild. Yeah, like get compensated by insurance and rebuild and all that other stuff. I mean, the housing market for, you know, high-end housing is going crazy. So it's, you know, it's just like aftermath stuff happening right now.
Has there been any further like talk about State Farm and all the insurance policy cancellations?
I haven't heard anything.
Hmm.
I mean, I talked to one guy who lost, his brother lost his house, and he said that they got living expenses from the state pretty quickly, but they're still, it's going to take a while for insurance to come through because they have to do like a physical on-site
to check if you're
and all that stuff.
If the house is actually like, is their house gone, or is it like?
From what I understand, I this was just at some dinner that I was at, but yeah, he was like, the house burned down, and then he had an investment house that burned down. He was in like some syndicate that owned houses.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean,
he got wrecked. You know,
yeah, he got kind of wrecked. He was not in a good mood.
I can believe
that's crazy.
That.
My
so
friend,
he's all in on just like his whole portfolio is basically an insurance claim at this point.
I mean, as far as his real estate goes, yeah, I mean, his own personal house was fine, and he works in finance, and I'm sure he has plenty of other assets.
Okay,
but
okay.
I mean, that's a big
chunk.
It's a big, huge, illiquid
it's a big
chunk.
Headache.
It's a huge headache.
Yeah.
My friend said his phone has been, you know, ringing off the hook. especially when around the immediate aftermath of the fire, because he's, you know, real estate guy. And he said, dude, like, he was telling me what he was seeing, and it was like, everyone blames the landlords for price gouging, which, fair enough, I don't really, it's not like I have sympathy for that, but the fact is that people were calling and saying, like, offering, you know, for a $15,000 a month rental, they were offering $25,000, but said, I need you to answer this within 1 hour. I need, like, my offer is good for 1 hour, and, you know, don't shop this around. Either take the offer now or I'm going somewhere else. Like, hardball tactics. And because I think that the people that can afford that, like, they're not unfamiliar with how to make deals, right? So they know how to make a hardball offer. And landlords were faced with these competing bids for their properties, and they're what are you gonna do? If I've got a property out there and someone's offering literally like 80% more than what I'm putting, you know, than what I'm advertising it as, what am I supposed to do? Tell them no?
Yeah. I think also if you receive an offer in that situation, it's not considered price gouging or illegal, as long as, like,
you didn't
trust them. Yeah, but you trust them not to fucking come after you. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, I'm sure there's special contracts.
I mean, what's the definition? Is there a legal definition of price gouging?
Yeah. California has some very specific thing, because there's so many natural disasters here.
Oh,
so there's like a whole infrastructure around.
This is like,
it was just one of these things where I'm saying, like, because the victims here were quite wealthy, that they were not exactly helpless. Like, they had money to throw at the problem, and they were not. Let's put it this way: they were not exactly acting in a communal fashion, right? They were elbowing whoever came out of that with the most cash was able to elbow their way into safety.
Yeah, it's like a feeding frenzy of sharks.
Yeah, yeah. So law firm apparently a lot of law firm partners lived in that area, and they lost their money, lost their homes, and these guys were making like $2-3 million a year, just throw in $25,000 a month at the problem.
Yeah, that's one of the fires, right? That's Palisades. But
Palisades, yeah.
The Eaton fire up in Altadena is a different story. A lot of
more working class neighborhood over there.
Yeah, right? A lot of middle class people were just fucked, basically.
Apparently, the mayor, someone looked at this. They said over the last month, the mayor had not tweeted the word Altadena once.
Probably not.
But Palisades, like, endless, countless times. What's her name? Karen Bass? Is that her name?
Karen Bass.
Yeah, she only cares about the Palisades. She didn't give a shit about Altadena. And then, of course, she fired the fire chief for failing to let her know the severity of the situation and allowing her to fly to Africa.
Right. Yeah. Just pass
really?
The buck.
Yeah.
You're kidding. Pass the buck.
No, I'm serious. It was in the news. She said,
shit rolls downhill. I mean, there is probably this technical detail of Palisades being technically in the city of Los Angeles, and I think the city of Altadena is a separate city. So I don't know how that factors into things, but yeah, LA County's the political geography and the physical geography is
fair point.
Is very, very weird.
But this is still pretty clearly like scapegoating. So
yeah, definitely. No, the mayor is a piece of shit for sure.
Yeah.
She really seems like, she seems awful. I'm sorry, but that video, I know it was opportunistically made, but that video of her coming out of the airplane from Africa and the reporter asked her some questions and she just like totally ignored him like he wasn't even there.
Yeah, either ignored or just froze like a deer in headlights.
I was like, dude, that's, you got to do, you're a politician. That's your job. You got to say something. You know what I mean? Like, she just totally wrote it off. Like, I'm not even, I'm not even acknowledging your existence.
All the governance here sucks, man. From head to toe, from the state all the way down to the city, everything sucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Because they just have this unlimited fire hose of money, no pun intended. And our fucking idiot voter base just keeps voting them in over and over and over.
Right.
And it's, do you think that's going to shift at all? Like, wasn't there was a bit of a shift. I know it's a federal election rather than like a state election, but there was a shift towards the Republicans this time, right? Including in California.
Yeah. I mean, but those were mainly in the the more inland counties, so that the numbers don't add up to like state level politics.
Okay. Okay.
So it's theory is it really is a performance industry, and it's not unlike Hollywood, where there's only so many recognizable name stars that are going to be what, like in New York, we're considering there's a legitimate push for Andrew Cuomo to come back as now as the mayor of New York City. After he was booted out as the as a completely corrupt and abusive governor. Now they want him back as the mayor because there's no other fucking choice, right? Like, if you're in the movie making business and you want to put out big movies, there's only so many lead actors and actresses that can anchor your movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, dude, you know, they say politics is Hollywood for ugly people.
Yeah. I mean, Andrew Cuomo's an ugly guy.
And then, dude, I mean, but dude, our literal mayor was a movie star. So our governor was a movie star for a while, right? So out here, it's just wacky.
Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, Schwarzenegger, yeah. Dude. Like, everything's just wacky. Like, even when the state flips Republican and is sick of the Democrats, who do we vote for? Fucking movie star guy.
Yeah.
Who's basically a Democrat. You know? It's fucking crazy, dude.
Man. He probably would have become president if he wasn't foreign born.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
He had a legit shot at becoming president.
Of course.
Yeah. Especially definitely. In that era, right? It was still like a feel-good era.
He was perfect.
He was overlapped Obama, basically, everyone right?
The economy was pumping, so every politician could do no wrong, right? It was like all of the
great
shit.
It was like very fair weather kind of times.
Yeah, so. It was right after 9/11, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it was in the lead up to the housing crisis. So yeah, everything was just crazy booming.
It was that long ago. Shit.
It was a while ago.
Damn.
Arnold is old as fuck now, man. He's like,
yeah, he was in New York recently filming and everyone was remarking how old he looks now. I thought he looked fine, but everyone was like, oh yeah, he looks
well,
ancient.
Yeah, I mean, compared to like the Terminator.
He kind of looks like Santa Claus now. He has like
you kind of have to admire or maybe just envy like people who can work to that age and are still kind of, you know, still probably mentally reasonably sharp. Like I'm kind of envious of that. I will say, right? Like I would.
He did have heart problems for a while. I think he.
Yeah, I mean, when you're he probably did a lot of steroids in his day too. Right?
Yeah, he did a lot of drugs when he was younger.
Yeah, so that's not crazy surprising. But like he's, you know, still working at 75. Not bad.
Still doing stuff.
Still doing shit. I would like to be able to do so at 75. So.
Yeah, like Pelosi.
Yeah.
I think it's incredibly these guys whose very name becomes an institution. Like Schwarzenegger is not just like a name. It's like a fucking brand, an institution. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's up there with like Michael Jordan and like Michael Jackson.
Yeah, know? Exactly. It's crazy how they're actually. It's literally just like one man, like a mortal. So I think it shocks people when he gets old. They're like, dude, he's a man.
You can't get old.
Yeah, I thought he was a god.
Yeah, exactly.
At least a machine.
Yeah.
I don't know, but. I don't know. What do you guys think of? What are we 2 months into Trump? Well, only 1 month into
it's
Trump.
It's only 1 month. Yeah.
It's
only a month. It's actually amazing.
2 days into Trump. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's fucking wild, man. They're just obviously flooding the zone. You know, with
shock and awe. It's total shock and awe.
Impossible.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I think people on the left are just like.
They're shell shocked.
Yeah, they're shell shocked and they have no coordination. They're just scrambling and like throwing these stupid press conferences where they just accuse everyone of stealing. It's like, all right, like they're pilfering, you know, all this. I don't know.
I mean, it's like the game is beyond, you know, moral suasion at this point. So. It's just power.
Well, all the fucking like Bernie Sanders was like, here's why. Putin
Trump
is the real dictator, you know,
and
Zelensky is, and I'm like, why is it of all the things that Trump is doing, right? The thing that really gets them mad on the left is that they're going to negotiate with Russia. to end a war. That's what really pisses them off. Like, nothing that Trump has done, including the whole, like, we're going to buy Gaza and kick everyone out and redevelop it as beachfront property. Like,
he
literally called it where it's going to be the Riviera of the Middle East.
Yeah, literally a Club Med.
So that's what he called. He said we're going to turn it into the Riviera of the Middle East.
I think the people on the left, everything has happened so fast that they haven't really grasped the concept of what's happening. Like, they haven't really grasped what's happening, right?
And why are they so huddling around the Russia thing?
That's what I really want to know.
That's really weird.
All of the stuff that used to work or worked last time, that's the only thing they have right now inside their playbook. So they just keep going for it, but they don't understand that nobody fucking cares. People have moved on from that, you know, like the war has been going on for 3 years and people are over it. I just don't think they've like totally grasped the fact that they lost that badly. I don't know.
I think any kind of moral principle argument on Trump is completely ineffective. Right, you just can't say, oh, the guy's bad, and he's like, oh, blah, 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 all these platitudes about being anti-democratic. Like,
yeah, that's why we voted for him, dude.
Yeah, it's like, okay, maybe, but, like, what are you going to do about it? Right? And half the time he does have a point. So here we are. They need a new strategy, right? Like, Trump maybe – Trump does shit, or at least he's trying to do shit.
You know what their new strategy is going to be? They're just going to have to JFK him, man.
That would be a civil war. I'm telling you, that is a civil war.
Maybe they're okay with that. I don't know.
They might be.
But what I'm saying is their desperate cling to this like war in Russia, to me, is not by accident. There is something going on. It's hard for me to understand exactly what it is, but I get the feeling like our previous government was not really headquartered in Washington. I think it was headquartered in Brussels. I think it really was, transatlantic sort of like thing that was going on.
The predicate for all of the money spending and the global empire building and all that stuff was, I mean, all of that stuff, you need like an enemy, right? Like a bigger than reality enemy that you focus all of your hatred towards.
Yeah, you need the Soviet Union.
Yeah, you need the Soviet Union, which is like today, I guess, would be Russia plus China plus North Korea and Iran or whatever.
Yeah, the new axis of what do they call it?
Axis of evil.
Yeah. So once that dissipates, then I think the popular will for funneling all this money for psyops and
where was there ever popular will for that?
Yes,
that was like elite.
I think there was at one point
during
the
Cold War for sure.
I mean in like the recent like 5-6 years.
Well, that's been the whole problem. I think the whole problem is that ever since 91 or 90, when
like
the
generation.
Soviet Union fell away, like it was like all the Cold War structures, they kind of leaned on each other, right? Like they were doing the Eiffel. The Eiffel Tower or whatever, when they're leaning on each other. So the Soviet Union was propping up the Warsaw Pact and whatever was propping up NATO and vice versa. But when one of them falls away, like NATO really doesn't have an antagonist to keep it together. And so it just over time sort of lost its purpose. And now they were trying to expand it to Asia. They wanted to basically bring Japan into NATO and sort of like recenter the North Atlantic Treaty organization around the Pacific Ocean. So they were desperately trying to justify the Cold War structures. And the thing with the Cold War structures, I think it's not just an economic system or defense system. I think it's also a cultural thing where
I was going to say a lot of this is generational momentum, right? Like everyone, boomers and older, were just like so, like just insanely just the, like their hatred for the East is just like insane, right? And as they actually physically die off and, you know, bigger cohorts arrive later on, like I think that the actual political will amongst the populace kind of dies off with it. But of course, the government itself, like the quote unquote deep state, they have all the money, so they could perpetuate that for a little bit longer. But at some point, it's just going to go away. And like, there's a new reality in front of you that you have to face.
Let me ask you, do you really think it's motivated by hatred of the East? And I assume you also include
it's
like
hatred of communism.
Hatred. I think there is that at the very, perhaps the very highest of levels with all these like sort of we have a Eastern European clique running foreign policy. If you look at everything from Brzezinski to Kissinger to to present day and
Chrystia and Freeland Lincoln, in Canada Newland. As well, right?
Blinken, like, yeah, all those people.
They're all, you know, it's kind
of
kinda
too. Madeleine Albright. Yeah, she was Czech. Yeah.
Oh.
She was Czech.
Yeah, so it's all anti-communist, right? So you have Russia, which was previously communist and somewhat of a dictatorial state now, you know, and then you have China, which is actually that's fucking they call
themselves
communist.
Literally says it in the party name.
It's in the name.
But there's that, but I think also the I don't think that the body of the momentum is really driven by true hatred of communism or whatever. I think it has to do with a certain self-image and identity of America in particular and the West as being sort of like that. I mean, they truly believe the idea that we're sort of the apotheosis of sort
of humanity.
Civilization, right, and of, you know, of power, but in a good way, or like productive power, you know, modernism.
It's all centered around first and second and third world thinking, right? Like the world is split up into these three layers or stratas, and then communism runs the second layer, and then there's like the unaligned third layer. I mean, the whole American exceptionalism thing, I think, just revolved around that concept. And now that developing economies are no longer shitholes, like you can go to a lot of these places and it's like totally fine. In fact, they have better infrastructure than a lot of the U.S. That entire like mode of thinking just starts falling away.
So that's the that's the red note thing on some level.
Yeah,
I think
but,
so.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
think
but,
so.
But I think that like this thing about, you know, what is propping up this Democrat, I guess, left leaning force to keep the war in Ukraine going is, I think, completely at the elite level. Not,
yeah, for sure.
It's just completely there, right? Like the self-conception of those elites is predicated on righteousness. We are good. We are powerful. We're bigger than everybody else, and it is a just thing. And if there's something that challenges that, especially I think if you're, you know, your material concerns of those people are completely handled, right? Like Blinken's never going to go hungry, right? Like these people, they are basically all fine. They may not be like rich.
Well, yeah,
but they're all
touch.
Fine, right? They're completely fine. They have nothing to struggle for other than like, I don't know, some kind of spiritual nourishment or whatever. And this is what
Blinken's
is.
Pretty rich. He's a principal at a consulting firm in Washington called West Exec.
Yeah, they I think they help foreign countries of do sanctions compliance and a lot of that stuff.
Can you believe that? So yeah, so one of the website. Well, what they do is they also place they're sort of a landing spot for ex U.S. officials. So like,
right,
you come
yeah,
out of government,
yeah,
you can get a job at West Exec.
Now you get some, then you make like a whole bunch of money and
yeah,
it's a revolving door.
But it was so funny because one of their major platforms, like you said, is sanctions compliance, which means how do I avoid sanctions?
Which you would
probably like,
provide the solution.
Basically, when he's in office, right, he's creating the sanctions against China. And then when he's out of office, he's selling compliance like services to help you evade those sanctions. It's crazy. Yeah. The whole thing is insane, but he makes loads
of
money.
That's the organized crime business model.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lovely country there. It'd be a shame if something were to happen to it.
It's absolutely a protection racket.
Yeah.
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 It's crazy. Yeah. But
I think all this is shifting though, because dude,
majorly.
From everyone from like Gen X down, they care less and less about this like
ideological,
anti-fucking communists or whatever. Because it's like, dude, these countries are not, they're not going to come over and bum you. Like, they're all they're doing is like waging like
regular ass people just have basically regular ass concerns.
Well, they're, I think what they were doing, I think with the Soviet thing, they were selling the idea that the Soviets were literally going to kill us, right?
Yeah.
And either kill us or incite an internal communist revolution that would turn us into them. And you wouldn't want to give up your awesome American lifestyle to be, you know, like a grayed out, colorless Soviet subject, right? So there was that sort of like organic fear that they were able to, and the fact that the Soviet Union was indeed very powerful and was threatening us all the time.
And there wasn't, there also wasn't like really any trade, right? Like,
right.
Like via China today.
I think with China, they changed the tune so that they were saying that the Chinese are literally just going to impoverish us by outcompeting us because they're literally like factory orcs. They're slave labor. And right. And so they're like, what? Look, they're like, what? You want to compete? Because China's basically saying, look, you guys are the ones that advocate this free market system. Okay. We're just competing hard. And I think the fear that they've been spreading is, if you really want to compete with China, like if you want free market competition with these people, you're going to have to work for literal peanuts in a fucking factory as a slave, and you'll sleep in the factory. That's the level of competition you're facing. Are you really want to do that? Or should we actually just go into a cold war and stop them altogether? And I think the answer thus far has been, I think we should stop them. We shouldn't compete. I think Trump may be looking at it a little bit differently, but...
I think it's dawning on people that you can't actually stop China. What does that even mean? You know, so war. There has to be a new solution. Yeah, exactly. Which is not good for anyone. So,
well, it might be good for
the US. It's either compete. Okay, so like, what are the choices here?
But not hot war, cold war, right? Like, they wanted
proxy
to.
War.
They wanted to wage a cold war against China. Yeah,
they want a proxy.
Yeah, everyone wants a proxy war with China. I mean, nobody wants to invade Taiwan more than, or China to invade Taiwan more than the U.S. government.
The US,
right?
Yeah, like
that
would, exactly.
Can you imagine they were enlisting the Philippines to do that?
Dude, it's
the Philippines to fight a war, a proxy war against China over what? I don't know, but literally, they're so dumb that the CIA has some fucking compromat on that Mark, the Bong Bong guy.
I think he's actually like, or somebody in his family is actually under sanctions, and they have like assets frozen or something like that. I don't know.
So they've got like compromat on like one dude, think they can run China policy based on that. I mean, it's amateur hour shit, dude. It's pathetic. The Philippines, what possible reason would the Philippines have to send human waves of Filipino soldiers to die on a beach landing on what? Some like unpopulated island in the South China Sea or what? Are the Filipinos going to go liberate Taiwan? What were they thinking?
I think they just want sanctions. They just want to.
I don't get what these people. I think they're fucking desperate. And they've been running the same fucking play since the 1960s.
Yeah, they just can't adapt to the new, like, real politic of the world, basically.
Yeah.
And they got voted out because of it.
In that way, like, Trump is much more realistic.
What's that?
In that way, like, Trump is, in a way, much more realistic, right?
I think he is.
Like, he's just retrenching.
He is much more realistic.
He's retrenching, and he's basically, like, bullying the countries that are really easy to bully. All right.
By the way, this is a good place for us to cut if you guys are down for finishing it out as a bonus.
I'm good.
Here. Okay. Sure. So let me check
my go ahead.
Okay, yeah. We'll continue this. We're going to continue this Saturday morning evening degen discussion over in the as a bonus pod part 2. If you want access to the bonus pod, go to patreon.com/planetmag to become a supporter. All right. See y'all.